Today's lesson is based on chapter 13 in Jung and the Last Gospels, which is called Redemption and Ecstasy, the Gospel of Truth and the Gospel of the Egyptians. The correlation you're supposed to make is that the Gospel of Truth deals with redemption and the Gospel of the Egyptians with ecstasy, but we may, in fact, not over that idea. Anyway, we have here two very distinct types of texts from early Gnostic sources. One, called a gospel because in a rather unique approach, it deals with the descent of the Redeemer and his ministry on the mortal plane. It's a very distinct approach because unlike the Orthodox Gospels that we find in the New Covenant, it is not simply a recounting of his life from birth or from immersion through crucifixion and resurrection. The significant points of his life, particularly crucifixion and resurrection, are brought into the story, and his teachings are brought into the story to some extent. But it is looking at the meaning of the ministry of the Redeemer. And that is what is considered to be the significant aspect of his life. It perhaps comes into focus a little better if we think about what the word gospel means. We do not generally use the word gospel anymore because it has taken on all these additional meanings that the word didn't originally have. Originally, it meant simply good news. So, if we think of this instead of the gospel of truth as the good news of truth, the good news about truth, or the good news that truth has sent, if we can think of it that way, although we're perhaps over-personifying truth there, certainly the good news that truth has emanated would be appropriate, then we might have a clearer feel for what this book is about and what a gospel really should be. And then if we approach the Gospels in the Orthodox New Covenant, or even in a Gnostic version of it, from that perspective, we're going to have a different meaning to the text. They're going to work differently in us. Because we aren't going to approach them as historical accounts of the mortal life of a man or person that was teaching these principles, we're going to approach them as myths that unfold the power of our redemption. And that's exactly how the gospel of truth, as it is traditionally called, was written. Was written to unfold the power of redemption. And the perception of that redemption through the ministry of the Redeemer. Through his teaching, through his ascending the cross, through his transcending the cross, and thereby showing us the path of our own redemption, which is to internalize the principles, become the personification of the principles, ascend the cross so that the ego is crucified and resurrected to a new theocentric existence, then that story has meaning for us. It has meaning in terms of our own lives. It has meaning in terms of our own ego death. And it has meaning in terms of our own resurrection and thereby our deification. So when we approach a text that purports to tell the good news of the Redeemer, we want to approach it in a manner that will allow us to apply it to ourselves. So that if we look at the descent of the Redeemer, it's in terms of the descent of the Redeemer to the mortal condition, but that mortal condition is our own mortal condition. And it's the descent of the Redeemer to our own mortal condition to enlighten us, that's the purpose of the teaching, and transform us, which is the purpose of the crucifixion, and the resurrection, so that we are deified as Christ was deified. Now, Christ was deified partly through his own original potential as a son of the divine Father. But then we are also deified partly as a result of our own divine potential as children of the same divine parents. And Christ was deified more through accomplishing his ministry and ascending the cross and transcending it. But we also are finally deified through accomplishing the purpose of our descent to the mortal plane and our ascending the cross and transcending it through the power of resurrection. So the whole story of the Redeemer is a story of what transpires in us in our quest to go from infancy to resurrection, in a quest for the fulfillment of our divine potential. Therefore, this gospel of truth, as it's called, is a good one because it helps us see the good news of Christ in terms of ourselves and its application to ourselves and our own quest for unity with that truth which is our source and our destination. In that way, this particular gospel gives meaning to all the others. It helps us put them in perspective and see how we can apply them to our own lives. Now, the other book, the so-called Gospel of the Egyptians, or as it's more correctly called, probably the Book of the Great Invisible Spirit or the Book of the Great Invisible Light, is a different kind of text in that it's not dealing with the ministry of the Redeemer, but specifically, but dealing with the means of transformation. Now, we said that the Gospels really are discussing the process of transformation in terms of the Gospel of Truth. But this one, it talks about the means of transformation, specifically as it relates to the temple rites, those rites through which our minds are transformed, so that we are able to perceive the realities that enable us to overcome or transcend the mortal condition and ourselves live on a higher plane of existence as a manifest part of that which is divine. So this text deals with different principles relating to that type of transformation. So we find that it dealt with chanting, words that would help the mind to focus on principles of reality, that it dealt with the life of the Redeemer in terms of his transcending qualities, that is, his ability to change our nature, that it happened to be a Sethian text, so it put forth Seth as the prototype of what we can be if we transcend our mortal limitations. And of course that was appropriate because Seth was another redeeming figure. In other words, Seth was the son of the Father, the first, the primal parents, the primogenitors. And in that relationship represented the Redeemer figure. Even down to some of the details, for example, it is said that the Son perfectly manifested the parents on the mortal plane, and it is said of Seth that he could not be descended, that he could not be distinguished from his father, except by age, that they appeared to be identical. Well, what we're being told here is something about ourselves, that we have the potential to be exactly like the parents who produced us, speaking of divine parents, of those who produced our true inner nature, that it has all the potential to become like its parents. And in a sense, every child is the testimony to that, because every child has the potential to become everything its parents were, and, in fact, more. Now, We can't become more than the divine in ultimate sense, but we can become more than the divine that produced us, because in the very process of producing us and helping us to find our own divinity, that divinity is increased. And we can follow it in that increase. So we have all of that potential and more. Well, how is that going to be brought about? Through the principles and practices we learn as part of the rites of the House of the Elohim. So this text, this second text, is in a way, well, I'm not suggesting that it's telling us the things we're going to learn in the rites of the House of the Elohim, but what I'm saying is that it's telling us about the process of transfiguration and the role of the temple rites and the role of ritual and the role of chanting and the role of meditation, the role of these different things in our transformation. And by transformation, we are ultimately, of course, talking about deification. So we have here two texts that, by their very nature, are introducing us not just to the fact that we can be redeemed from darkness and transformed until we are divine, but also giving us insights into the process through which that can be brought about. These books, if they are the good news of the descent of the Redeemer, are also the good news of the ascension of the Redeemer, if you will, but through that ascension, our own ascension. If they tell how the Redeemer descended to the mortal plane, they also tell how we descend to mortality, that we come from something greater, that there is something greater as our central essence. And if they tell of the ascension of the Redeemer, they also tell of our own ascension through which we transcend all mortal limitations. And we ourselves become not just the personification of the divine, but the presence of the divine while in this mortal plane and going beyond this mortal plane into all that follows. So we descend, that which descends also has the potential to ascend. That which ascends must first have descended. And all of this is laid out for us in these texts in a way that can help us understand the process in principle, so that we can go through the process in a way that will bring us to the realization of our full potential as children of the Elohim, which means our full potential to be Elohim. Amen.
Amen. Amen.